An abrupt resignation in the Federal Reserve banking system. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The head of one of the 12 Federal Reserve banks has resigned. It's Jeffrey Lacker, president of the Richmond Fed, who suggested he might have been the one who revealed confidential central bank information to a Wall Street analyst. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now from Washington. Nancy, what do we know about where and how this started?
Well, David Lacker spoke with an analyst at Medley Global Advisors in October of 2012. And this was after a Fed meeting where the Fed talked about buying $45 billion worth of Treasury securities a month. It was part of the Fed's efforts to stimulate the economy after the financial crisis. And this analyst sent out a note with details about the plan that was supposed to be confidential. The Fed's Inspector General and the Justice Department investigated the leak of this information, and that led up to Lacker resigning.
All right, so now he is out, but do we have a sense of what motivated this?
No. I mean, Lacker is maintaining that he just inadvertently confirmed this information. Some Fed critics say that there is more to this, that the main leaker hasn't been found. The Fed issued a statement yesterday saying it is committed to maintaining the secrecy and security of confidential information and that it cooperated fully with the investigation.
All right. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer live from Washington. Thank you. Let's check our live market screens here. The 100-share index, the FTSE in London, is up 6 points, about a tenth of a percent. Things are mixed for U.S. stock index futures. The S&P future is down a point, the Dow future up 3 points. China may be getting tougher on imports of genetically modified crop varieties, often grown by U.S. producers. Chinese regulators are getting pickier about what they let in. Those are crops engineered to resist things like bugs and weed killers. China is the largest export market for instance, genetically modified soybeans from the U.S., Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
China used to take up to about 2.5 years to approve new biotech crops for import, according to Veronica Nye, an economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation. But Nye says that's changed.
We have some in the pipeline now that are going on 65 months of being in the process.
Chinese consumers have long opposed GMOs, but the expansion of the Chinese middle class has meant more meat consumption and more imports of genetically modified crops to feed livestock. As a result, China is easing its own restrictions on the commercial production of GMOs. Peter Phillips teaches public policy at the University of Saskatchewan, and Phillips says China's slower approval of foreign biotech traits could be strategic.
In that they're trying to introduce products at the right time in the right place to benefit their producers and consumers more than others.
U.S. farmers want to plant seeds with the newest and best traits, but run a big risk doing so if those traits haven't been approved yet in key markets like China. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
This month, we're looking at something big, how machines and computers are increasingly entering the workforce. Because here's the thing, it's not just trade that's competing for American jobs, it's also technology. Next week on this program, you can hear my road trip through the Midwest in search of what I'm calling robot-proof jobs. But this morning, here's a reminder that staying on the right side of technological disruption can be tough. Listen to the story of this Marketplace listener. Robots ate his job and his retraining.
My name's Dana Heath. I was a machinist for 28 years, from 1980 to 2008.
Heath was working in Maine for a company called Creative Machine.
I was part of the shoe industry. We made aluminum molds for the soles of shoes.
He spent his days making these molds. Early on, he saw the computers were coming, so he started taking classes.
I went back to school for a computer and went to night school for 7 years. Because I thought I was going to get out of the trade and get into something more lucrative. But by the time that 7 years was up, I was far behind in the computers, and I had a bill of about $5,000 for the college. So I really couldn't use what I had learned because I didn't learn it quick enough. And I was getting raises in the machining side of it, so I said, well, you know, I'm making good money. I have a really good health program. I'm going to just forget about trying to go further, and I'll stick with this.
He stuck with it until a new generation of machines came into the factory. Computer numerical control, CNC units, where the machines do whatever a computer tells them. Machinists become computer operators, essentially.
And in 2008, I was let go. it was really through no fault of my own. It was because the way in which the production work is done had changed so much that I was kind of a dinosaur in that industry.
What next? Well, Heath had already tried that retraining in tech, ending up with debt and skills that were quickly made obsolete as tech progressed further. If he was going to change his career again, Dana Heath figured it would have to be a dramatic switch.
And I went back to college to get a degree in social work because the calling that I felt was to do prison ministry. So in the end, everything worked, you know, for a better outcome, really. But at that time, I had no idea what I was going to do when I got let go.
Heath is now 65 and volunteers in Florida prisons. We've been taught that technology tends to create more better jobs, even as it destroys the old ones. But there's new evidence that this time may be different. If so, how do we human workers have to adapt to a challenge that may be bigger than globalization? Our Robot Proof Jobs series will be here all this month. Plus, starting Monday, listen to part one of my audio documentary about all this. It'll be in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed, where always free subscriptions are available there, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.